Here we go. All right. Well, let's get started. Hello and welcome to the November 2025 edition of the DMSE Masterclass. This monthly class is for current DMSE students, faculty, and frankly, anyone interested in the Doctor of Medical Science program at the Arizona School of Health Sciences, A.T. Still University. We have the opportunity each month to hear from inspiring masters in the PA profession and healthcare who have made a significant impact. Before we begin, a few reminders for our attendees. Please keep your microphones muted and feel free to share any comments or questions in the chat section during the presentation. And at the end, we'll have a Q&A session where you can unmute yourself. Dr. Beth Popray, our program manager, will be monitoring the chat for any questions or comments. It's really a pleasure to introduce our guest today, Raquel Caven. Raquel has been a PA for almost 14 years with over a decade of experience specializing in neurosurgery, orthopedics, and other surgical subspecialties. She currently serves as faculty and assistant professor in the Doctor of Medical Science program at the University of Lynchburg. Raquel is widely recognized for her impactful work in PA advocacy and as the founder of two prominent PA women's organizations, which we'll talk about, PA Moms and PAs for Women Empowerment. Both organizations are affiliated with the American Academy of PAs and have become invaluable resources for supporting and empowering PAs nationwide. Dedicated to advancing the PA profession, Raquel focuses on fostering continuous education, empowerment, and leadership development. Her vision for the future includes expanding educational opportunities, strengthening support networks for PAs, and championing the vital role of PAs in an ever-evolving healthcare landscape. And I could go on, but I'd rather move on and talk to Raquel. Raquel, welcome to our master class.
Thank you so much. I'm really honored to be here, especially with these amazing guests on the call. You guys could definitely teach me some stuff as well, because we have some really great people here. This is something that I'm really passionate about, teaching DMSC students, teaching PA students. So whoever's going to hear this, I'm really excited to be here.
And we're so excited to have you here as well. Let's just start off from the very beginning. Tell us about your experiences before PA school and uniquely how you ended up being a PA.
Yeah, so my experiences were really personal, actually. When I was 4 and when I was 9, I actually had surgery. They didn't know what was wrong with me. I had abdominal pain as a kid, starting when I was 4 years old. And I had to have surgery. They had no idea what was going on. It took probably about 3 to 4 months to figure out what was happening. And it was I remember a little bit of it at 4 because it was pretty traumatic, but my parents thought I had uterine cancer actually, and so it was very traumatic for them as well. And it ended up being an ovarian torsion, which is very interesting because you always hear about like testicular torsions, right? But for me, it was an ovarian torsion. And then again, at 9 years old, I had another surgery again on my other ovary. So, it's just really interesting. It's also something that I tell my students to not only think about testicular torsions, but to think about ovarian as well, because I did lose one ovary. And so that's when I really began my interest in helping people because I was in the hospital. I was in and out of hospitals, in and out of doctor's offices, and everything like that as a child for years. And so, because of all those complications, and that's when I started my interest in just helping people in general. And then as I grew up, I really loved science and loved the human body. And in my undergrad, I became an EMT. And so I did that at SUNY Oneonta. And then I also did that at Jones Beach as well. So I was an EMT at both. And so that's how I gained my experience. And then I went to PA school at Pace University. So,
Wow, what a way to get your experience into medicine. Well, tell us a little bit about your, right out of PA school, and you've had a lot of experience in clinical medicine. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so right after PA school, I actually thought I wanted to go into dermatology. I still love derm, not gonna lie. But I ended up in plastic surgery for my first job. And at that job, we did a lot of cosmetic plastics, but it was an awesome surgeon. I'm still friends with him to this day. And I worked there for 2 years. And then I transitioned to Jacoby Medical Center in the Bronx, and I worked there for 6.5 years. And I was the lead neurosurgical PA there. It was an awesome experience, a teaching hospital. I had the chance to do like rounding every day with multiple, with the radiologist, with tumor board, and with, and we did M&M. It was just very teaching forward hospital, and they gave us a lot of autonomy as well. So it was just a great experience working there. And then after that, I moved into doing more of an OR only type position where I moved into orthopedics, a little bit of general surgery and breast surgery as well. And then after that, I had my second child and then moved to Austin, Texas. So then kind of transitioned into a different role in Austin where I did more first assisting in the same subspecialties. So.
Wow, excellent. Well, let's talk a little bit about your transition after your clinical experiences into education. As you just mentioned, you moved from, a successful clinical career in surgery, including, as you mentioned, high pressure roles in neurosurgery at a level one trauma center, into medical education. And I have to tell you, I did that years ago, and it was a difficult transition from clinical practice into academia. So what prompted for you that pivotal transition, and what surprised you most about moving from the OR to the classroom?
Yeah, so actually, I have a really unique story and reason for switching over. Shortly after I moved to Texas, like 3 or 4 years after, I actually was in a car accident and had a stroke. And I took a year off of work because of that. And it was really hard for me because I absolutely love surgery. I love my clinical practice so much. And I had to realize that I wasn't going to go back right away. Like, I wasn't going to just take off 3 months and then be able to go back because I needed time to heal, and get better. I was, I had some cognitive difficulties and I also had left-sided, paralysis and then weakness. And it took time to get better. And when I started getting better and I wanted to go back to work, I was thinking like, what am I going to do? And one of the things that I knew I loved was this profession. Number one, I was already doing a lot of advocacy with the Texas Academy of PAs and with PA Bombs. And I was like, how can I use that passion in my job that I'm going to do every day? And then one day I like literally woke up in the middle of the night and I was like, maybe I should look into education because this would be like a great way to use my passion and help PA students. So I actually I looked online for jobs and then I actually spoke to one of my mentors and a PA mom who was like, oh, well, I'm actually hiring for somebody in Austin to develop the new PA program at South University. And I was like, this is like amazing and so perfect. Like the timing was just amazing. And I was like, okay, like this is awesome. I can basically, develop a new program. And I love like creating things from the ground up. So I decided to do it. And it was such a huge challenge. So like you said, going from clinical work to academia, you would think that it would be like an easier job, but in no way is education easy at all. It is one of the most challenging work I've ever done, especially developing a new program. That's exactly why I actually got my DMSC, and I got my DMSC in medical education because I wanted to learn more about like the bread and butter of education and about PA accreditation and everything like that. So I think that it's really important when you transition to have really good mentorship, get that basic understanding of education as well. You can do that by getting your DMSC or, going to PAEA and stuff like that, or just having good mentors. But that's how I got into it.
Wow. And I think you'll agree that in life, some things happen for a reason. And, an opportunity for you to move from clinical practice, into academia at a time in your life that really to make a difference. And this sort of leads me to the next question, what specific moment or experience led you to recognize the need for PA moms? And what were the biggest challenges and launching a national organization from the ground up?
So the reason I started PA Moms was all the way back when I was the neurosurgical PA. I was a lead neurosurgical PA. I would go to, this is a very similar story to a lot of other PAs, but we go to work for 13-hour shifts and then we don't see our kids the entire day. And by the time my daughter was by the time I was home from work, my daughter was already sleeping, and then I would wake up the next day and go to work again. So I wouldn't see her for 3 days in a row. And I was starting to get, a lot of mom guilt, and I needed people that were like me that I could speak to. And I didn't have that because I was still in my 20s. There weren't a lot of my PA friends who had kids yet. And so I was like, I need a group, I need something. And I saw that there were other groups online on Facebook that existed for other types of people, like physicians and, all kinds of different mom groups. And I was like, why isn't there a PA mom group? So that's where I came up with the idea. And I actually started the group with two other people. And we started as basically two people, and now today we're over 20,000 people. So it's really, really awesome. So basically started the group out of my own need. And it became something way bigger than just a support group. Now it's, an AAPA organization. We give, certified medical education. We give scholarships to students, and we do, informal and formal mentorship. And we do fundraising efforts for PA moms in need who have cancer or lost loved ones. And it's just an amazing group that has a lot of potential to help the profession and also each other. So.
Yeah, wow. And you've already started talking about this, but can you share some of the most common challenges that PA mothers face that might surprise people outside the profession?
Yeah, I would say, I don't know if this would ex surprise everybody, but the fact that moms have so much guilt that comes from every single direction. I feel like we're constantly being pulled in every direction, right? From work, from home, childcare, and then also the most important thing, which is self-care. And I think a lot of us do forget to care for ourselves, and we really do need to remember to care for ourselves first. So I would say that's the most common thing. I think, the other more common things is a lack of paid maternity leave in or parental leave in general in medicine. The fact that people are asked to bounce back immediately after having children, right? Like after 6 or 12 weeks, you're expected to go right back and put your child in daycare. And every single time that happens, a mom posts about it because it is somebody who needs support, because it didn't even get better after the first child. When I brought my second child to daycare, it actually got worse. I felt even more guilty and I felt even more scared. And I think that all parents feel the same way. I feel like the mother bond with the child is just like this innate. It's very innate and different. So.
Yeah, wow. Well, Raquel, how do you balance your own identity as a mother with your demanding career? I mean, what practical strategies have you developed that you wish someone had shared with you earlier?
I think the number one thing that I'm actually pretty good at is letting go of perfectionism. I know I'm not really a perfectionist. I'm more of the type of person that tries things more than other people. So I think letting go of perfectionism, not expecting yourself to have like this perfectly clean house, this perfect job, this perfect husband, this perfect, like you're not gonna have all of that. Like you really can't do it all. And so I try to balance things out. There's really no such thing as work-life balance either. You kind of have to integrate that. So number one, like letting go of perfectionism and then having work-life integration, integrating your work life into your home life. And so there's a lot of ways to do that. And I could do an entire lecture on that. I do have a lecture on that. But those are like the most important things. And then I would say setting boundaries with not only your work, but also your family. Whether it's like your immediate family or, your extended family, and then doing that without apologizing, I think that's really important. Having a supportive partner also really helps. So for me, if I didn't have such a supportive partner, I think that things would be a lot different. Those are my big things.
Wow, well said. Raquel, you co-founded the AAPA Caucus for PAs for Women Empowerment, I think back in 2021. What systematic barriers did you identify that started this caucus, and what progress have you had since it was founded?
So, me and other PA Moms leadership team members actually founded that caucus in 2021. And I think the reasoning behind that was we wanted a place, a few reasons. We wanted a place where not only moms felt like they belong, all women, we wanted a place where we can make people leaders. So that's the other thing. So that's part of the PAs for Women Empowerment mission. And we also wanted another group where we could do more lobbying and be the voice for PAs at the House of Delegates. So the PAs for Women Empowerment group, they do a lot of the policies at the House of Delegates. They'll work with legislation. Especially for like parental leave, and they did some really great things with AEDs as well for children. So they're doing a lot of the policy work, and PA Moms is doing a lot of the education. I mean, we're both doing education and we're partner organizations. But they are doing more of the policy stuff and the lobbying because it's a 501c6 organization.
Very good. Well, Raquel, you've received, if I read the information correctly, Mother of the Year in Texas and America's Top PA, and the real question is, how do you navigate the pressures of being a visible role model while really staying authentic to your own challenges and growth? And I guess the real question is, how do you do what you do?
I'll tell you this, I wasn't always good at being a good leader. And I've done a lot of work on that. I have, an executive coach. I have some really amazing mentors in this profession. And I've done a lot of work on myself to become a better leader, to be able to lead others and lift them up. Like I was always able to lift people up, I feel like, but it's different being a leader of such a large group, trying to maintain. You have to also be super professional online because that's where I am all the time, right? It's where people see me the most. And I think that's a huge challenge too, because I have to kind of put my own biases and my own opinions to the side sometimes because of that. And I actually wrote there was an article that I did on that as well. So you can read about it online about being staying professional online. I think it's really important as leaders that we do that. Also, my leadership style is more of an authentic leadership style. So I think it's really important to just to be yourself. And not everyone's going to like you. And I'm still working on being okay with that. And I just know, I always just say to myself, as long as that I'm doing what I love, doing what I'm passionate about and helping others and staying true to myself, that's all I need to do to be happy. So.
Yeah, well said. In your current role at Lynchburg, the DMSC program as Director of Innovation and Strategic Initiatives, and let me stop here. At the very beginning, you had a background for Lynchburg and you wanted to change it so it didn't look biased. And I said, hey, we're all in this together, and we just really appreciate you being here. What innovations are you most excited about? About bringing, a curriculum to advance PA education.
Yeah, so my role at Lynchburg, I'm actually the director of engagement and advancement, and also the director of the course called Healthcare Advocacy. And what I'm really excited about at that program is we're really flexible, and I know a lot of the programs are as well, but I love how the faculty is super flexible. We have so many different concentrations and certificates that people can choose from. But my role specifically with engagement and advancement is to basically engage the alumni community, engage with the students, create strategic partnerships to ensure that our students are getting everything that they can out of their education. Expanding our online presence. So doing the social media, I love that. I love using my creativity. And then also engaging with people at conferences. So I'm in charge of, I don't go to every conference, but I'm going to be going to a lot of them. And I love to talk with my peers and I love to meet everybody. And I love to even, collaborate with other DMSC programs. For example, right now I'm actually doing a paper with multiple PAs from different programs. And I'm really excited for that to come out. So, doing a lot of research as well. So it's been really great.
Excellent. Your career reflects what I think you call community-driven leadership. So how do you define that term, and how does it differ from traditional leadership models in healthcare?
That's interesting. For me with PA moms, I think I do a lot of listening. I see every single, so our community is basically people posting. They talk about everything from their personal stories to, problems they're having in the profession or problems they're having at work. And I think what's really unique about my role is I get to listen and see what the pulse of our community is, of what the PA community is. I mean, I don't he see I only I'm only seeing women's perspectives. However, we are majority women. And I really think seeing what the pulse of the PA profession is, seeing what they want, is really awesome and really unique. I think that and that's what's like unique about it, is listening first and then deciding what we really need from there. So.
Yeah, very well said. And as we've learned today, you've successfully advocated for change at the organizational, institutional, national levels. What advice would you give aspiring PA leaders, particularly those just out of PA school or those who are just out of post-professional DMSC programs? I think many folks get out and really feel that their voices don't carry enough weight. So what's your advice to these folks?
So if you're just getting out as a master's level student, I would say get involved with your state organization. All you have to do is join, number one. You need to be a member of your national organization, AAPA, and the state organization, and at least volunteer for a little bit and see, where you can use your passions. If you love art, you can do social media. If you love advocacy, you can be on their advocacy team. But I would say if you want to get into leadership, so that's a great way to do it. But leadership is built with like really small steps. So like speaking up, volunteering, like I said, and advocating for yourself. So it's really important to do these things. And I think that really it could be done either at a national level with AAPA or with your state org.
Yeah, very good advice. Earlier we were talking about work-life balance, and you've accomplished such a great deal while raising a family. So, what myths about work-life balance do you think need to be looked at and retired, and what's a more realistic framework?
Yeah, so like I kind of said this earlier, but I feel like it's a myth, the fact that people think that they're going to have a balance between life and work is really a myth. I think it's more about integrating your work life with your free time. For me, I think that, and then also having really good boundaries, like I said before, is really important. When I'm with my family, I try to put away my phone or I'm not answering emails or messages. I actually had a really big problem with this like over a year ago or 2 years ago. I was way worse. I was always on my phone because my group, PA Moms, is on my phone, right? So I was always checking it, always checking it. I learned to rely on my team more and be a better leader. And they, I'm relying on them a lot more, and I'm able to kind of take a step back, and keep boundaries up, not always checking and doing like checking only at certain times of the day. So that's like super important as a leader. You don't want to burn yourself out because leaders who are feel burned out or feel so much stress, they actually become really bad leaders. Because the stress will wear them down and then they become, irritated or they're not really thinking before they do things. So it's really important to not let that catch up to you.
Yeah, really good advice. Thank you. Let's take a look a little bit about the PA profession, and many of us on this Zoom meeting have been around for a while. Looking at where the PA profession is heading, what really excites you the most? And the second part is, what concerns you the most?
Wow. Okay. Well, I don't know if everyone's going to agree with me here, but what excites me the most is that we're getting some momentum with full practice authority or what they call PA practice modernization. We have, I believe, seven states that have some sort of PA practice modernization laws that have gone into play. I'm hoping, more states this year. It will happen. Also, the title change momentum has been awesome this last year. I'm really excited about it. We have three states that have changed their title in legislation. And I think we have, I think, over 100 states, or I don't know. Actually, I don't think that's right. We have many states that have actually changed their association's name as well. I think maybe 35 or 40 states have done it. So, that's pretty awesome. And I am also really excited about more PAs getting their doctoral degrees as well. Oh,
Yeah,
and what am I most scared about? The
yes.
most scary thing is actually that some PAs are graduating and they don't have a good grasp of what their identity is, what the PA identity is, and what we're actually trying to go for. When I say full practice authority or PA practice modernization, I think there's a lot of PAs that are graduating these days that don't really understand what happened in 2017 in the House of Delegates, and what we're trying to get passed through legislation. So I think that we need to do a better job teaching advocacy.
Yeah, well said. And I have to say, in terms of modernization, as you know, there's about six, seven, maybe eight states now that have a PA-centric regulatory board. Arizona is one of them, and one of our folks here tonight, Kendra Clark, is a member of that board. And the opportunity to have PAs make a decision about the regulation of PAs. If there's only eight states, we have a long way to go. And I think if we can find better ways for PAs to play a huge role in the regulation of our own profession, that's good for us, gives us the power to do that. So, and
Absolutely. That's like
yeah.
actually we're the one of the only, I think we are the only profession that does not regulate itself.
Yeah.
I think we're really the only profession. Are we really a profession if we're not regulating ourselves?
True, true.
So.
Well, and looking at some other professional issues, as you know, there's a lot of discussion around the entry-level doctorate degree in PA education. A year or two ago, PAEA voted to keep the master's degree as the entry-level degree for PAs. But as you know, they have folks looking at, what the future is in terms of doctoral level. What's your thoughts on this topic? Where do you think we should go with this?
So I'm actually the one who, well, me and some people on this call from Texas wrote that resolution. So I'm really biased. I think that the I think what's going to end up happening is the consumers are going to make the decision, and we see that happening right now with 45 programs opening. And then I think once we get it together and we're able to open an entry-level doctorate program, then we're going to see a domino effect and it's going to start happening. We just have to get over that hump of, I think there's some places right now trying to open up an entry-level program. And once they're able to do that, that's where the glass ceiling will be broken and it'll start happening. I think for HOD to do it, it's going to take a lot more arguing and talking, but it's nice to be able to talk to your colleagues. And I really love going to the House of Delegates and having the discussions. I think it's important that we all talk in one room. I think it's awesome. So.
Yeah, very well said. As a clinician and educator, what advice would you give to our DMSA students and our alumni about their future in the PA profession?
So number one, your doctoral degree is a launch pad, and don't wait for anyone to give you permission to lead. So you were already a leader when you graduated with your master's. Also, you deserved a doctorate when you graduated with your master's. Also, use your voice, use your story and your expertise. We all are so amazing. I know so many PAs from my group, from places where I worked that are honestly the one of the most amazing people in the world, and we are the one of the most amazing professions in the world. We just have to keep fighting the fight, and I know it's hard, and I know it's difficult to listen to the naysayers, but we got this. And I'm really excited for to see all the amazing leaders that come out of every single doctorate program.
Yeah, very well said. I always have, I tell people, Randy's four S's that's important. That is show up, stand up, speak up, and know when to shut up. And
Oh, no.
that's done me well. In a few minutes, I'm going to open it up to some questions. And I know we have a number of folks here that are really anxious to talk with you. But, with your busy schedule, Raquel, tell us what you do for fun.
Well, number one, I'm crazy because what I do for fun is I literally volunteer to do more community service. I'm also the VP of fundraising for my PTA for the elementary school, and so I do for fun. I go to the elementary school. We'll put on events. We raise money. I love to hike and love to travel. I love doing traveling that involves hiking and just exploring different parts of the world and the United States. Me and my kids love to do art projects together. And then I also have a pet snake. His name is Flashy. So that's kind of like a hobby as well because I have to take care of him and I should have brought him to the meeting. That would have been cool. But yeah, I love taking care of him, and I also prioritize, resting and renewal. I love to sleep. So I don't, that's the one thing I don't prioritize on is sleep. Seriously. So
Well said. Well,
not prioritize. I mean, I don't, I have to sleep.
yep,
If I
no,
don't sleep, I'm like done.
I'm with you. Okay. Well, I'm gonna open it up for questions from the folks that are here, but I'm gonna also call on our good friend Rick Kilgore, who's with us today, to say a few words and maybe ask any questions that he might have. I sort of, just ask him today if he would show up, and we really appreciate Rick, you being here. So, any questions or comments?
I have a question, Dr. Danielson.
Oh, okay. I was hoping to, let's see, hold on a second. I was thinking if Rick was there, but
Oh, I
I'm
apologize.
here. I'm sorry. I was
Oh,
slow on getting moving to open up. So,
that's cool. Kendra, hold on 1 second. I'll just give Rick a chance here.
Raquel and I obviously work very closely together and currently working on a manuscript we hope to be published at the end of the year on promotion and tenure, a subject that's dear to most of us that are in academia. But Raquel, one thing, and this is a pet peeve of mine, I think in the past that other individuals, other organizations have defined the PA profession. So I know you've started publishing more. So how much do you think that is important for graduating doctoral PAs to understand how important it is for them to articulate their experiences, to look at the profession, to look at healthcare, and to have an active voice through publications?
Absolutely. So first of all, if you're in your doctoral program right now, this is your chance to learn how to write. So learning how to write is the first step. And then use your voice, right? If you're excited about a certain subject, that's kind of what I do. When I'm excited about something, then I start writing about it. Making sure it's evidence-based with good resources, and then getting it published. I only have like one or two published manuscripts, so this will be like my first big one, and so I'm not like that experienced with it, but I'm starting to really understand how to do it, and I have great mentors like Rick and others that have been helping along the way, and so I think that's like a big thing too, is getting some people. You can literally just post on PA Moms or another group and be like, hey, anyone know how to publish? I've seen people do it before, and and I also have a lot of students, doing research on PA Moms too. They're like asking for surveys to be filled out. So it's pretty cool. Yeah, I definitely think it's 100% necessary for PA leaders to be publishing though.
And Randy, I'd say one more thing because Raquel and I have also worked on this. And I was fortunate to get the publication of the year in 2025 for talking about the doctoral degree and the benefits. But when we start talking seriously about the entry-level doctoral degree, which many of us are involved with, it's very important to step back and not say, especially if you're a clinical PA, how does this impact me? I think our bigger picture, and Raquel's dealt with some of this and politically in the House of Delegates and other places, is what's the bigger picture? Looking down the road, because many of us, as you've said, I don't call us older PAs, we're legacy PAs. We've seen all these changes, but it's so important for the newer PAs and the PAs getting their doctoral degrees to be able to see the big picture and talk about what the impact could be for our profession. We saw it go from a certificate to a bachelor's to a master's degree and now to the doctoral. So I just hope people like Raquel can motivate people to really get involved and to write the papers, to tell the story, and to look beyond just themselves to see how it can impact the profession.
Yeah, well said, Rick. Thank you so much. Let me jump over to Kendra that I interrupted a while ago. Kendra, your question, and when you're done, would you do me a favor and talk a little bit about your new organization that you started?
Of course. First of all, I want to say I'm sorry. I didn't mean to step on Rick's
Nope.
toes. I walked in and I heard questions, and so I really enjoyed this presentation. I want to say, Raquel, thank you very much. I'll take my video off here, our video on. I just want to say, Raquel, thank you very much for presenting such a beautiful presentation. And also, you are such a great example of a young mom that wears so many hats. And in my opinion, the short time I've really listened to you, you do so with grace. And it's impressive. I just want to share that with you because I understand what it's like to have plan Bs or situations in your life that causes or forces us to pivot in a different direction. And you have done so beautifully. And I just wanted to share this with you. I don't have a specific question necessarily, but I just want to say, well done. Well done. And you have young children and you're still going and you're still doing and you're making meaningful change. And from this old PA that's been around for a very long
Thank
time.
you. I actually follow you also on Facebook. I think we're friends on Facebook.
Oh,
Yeah,
we are, babe. Oh,
because
I
I think
didn't realize. Well,
you were in PA Moms. I don't know if you're still in it. But I followed your story. So you've been through a lot too.
wow. I'm honored that you would follow my story. I would love to think that I was part of PA Moms. I'm a grandma of seven now, so I'd be honored to kind of think that I could go down to the mom role.
I don't know
But
how we became friends, but I swear I used to follow you, so
oh, I'm so
yeah,
honored. And
I
I just
probably
really
still
wanted to,
do.
oh, well, I'm just really want to just provide from my heart to yours just beautiful accolades and say, well done. I'm really, really proud of you. And just keep going. Just
Oh,
keep
thank
going. And
you.
I love,
You're
I'm
so
sure I
sweet.
can speak for Randy, Dr. Danielson on this, that, we have these younger PAs and I consider you a younger PA. And it's so rewarding for those of us who've been doing this for a very, very long time to see these younger, vibrant leaders, and forward thinkers that are really taking over. And it's just very rewarding. So I just wanted you to hear that from my mouth here. And just quickly, just to share briefly, I have a 501c3 public charity, which is called the Disability Health Education Initiative. And Raquel, you probably know this from some of my posts, but bottom line is, and very quickly, it's a nonprofit. I'm very passionate about patients with disabilities. And so if anybody's interested, you're welcome to kind of look deeper and learn more. But bottom line is, my passion and my goal is just to make sure that every PA is trained on how to take care of patients with disabilities, because right now we are lacking, desperately lacking. And so by the beautiful mentorship that I have with Dr. Danielson, who I just love dearly, I feel so blessed to have the support from Beth Popery and the team at ATSU to continue this forward and to make sure that I do all that I can to make meaningful change as well, so that we have disability-specific training in physician assistant training programs. And so I have 14 volunteers now, and it's super busy and it's exciting. So yeah, so whenever there's when I'm an old dog, but I'm learning new tricks and it's just so fun. So I just, yeah, I really am inspired by your story. And I appreciate you, Dr. Danielson, giving me the platform to share a little bit about it. But if anybody's interested, please feel free to look up the Disability Health Education Initiative. If you have a heart for patients with disabilities, please come join us. We'd love to have you. So thank you so
I would love
much.
to actually let's connect because I have some people that I've met through Instagram who are PAs with disabilities
Oh,
who,
wonderful.
yeah, they're I'll connect you with them. They may like
Please.
want to be part of it because of like the mission.
I love
So,
it.
and because of like what they went through. So it's just really
I love
interesting.
it. I love it. Yes, thank you so much. And I appreciate you helping me with that. That'd be wonderful. And all right, I've taken this time, but just thanks again for everything you've done. And thank you, Dr. Danielson.
Thank you. All right, let's open it up. Anybody else, just unmute yourself and ask any questions or make any comments. We have plenty of time left. You
Hello,
don't. Yeah, go ahead, Julia.
this is Julia. Thank you, Dr. Danielson. Raquel, I really appreciate your talk tonight. And I do have one question. Did you go into neurology after your stroke? Because I know that you went in, I know that you went into academia. What inspired you to go into neurology?
So I did neurosurgery after plastic surgery, and that was all before my stroke. I was the crazy patient in the ER calling all of my neurosurgeon friends. I was out of my mind though. But like my husband makes fun of me because of it. But yeah, so I became my patient. Like I became one of the patients that I was basically taken care of, which is insane. So that was really difficult also. But the reason I went into neurosurgery was kind of I fell into it. It was a really cool job in the Bronx, and I wanted to work with the underserved. I wanted to work in a hospital, and I wanted to do clinical medicine. The plastic surgery job was really cool, but I wasn't really getting any medicine as a young PA, and so that's why I went into neurosurgery. I wanted a challenge, and boy, it was a challenge. So.
Thank you.
Thanks, Julia. Other folks, comments. Dr. Delaney, you're out there. I'll put you on the spot.
Hi, Randy, and thank you. I just want to say thanks to Rocky for sharing your story. I think it's very inspiring, and I think these are hopefully we get more of our students to listen to your story and get that advocacy spark that you've certainly, it's something that we all try to inspire students to do. And want to, and as a also as a instructor in a DMSC program teaching health policy and advocacy, it's great when I get feedback from a student that says something to the extent that this course inspired me to look for further or to get more involved or something of that sort. So I think in the role that you're in and with PA moms and your visibility, I think it's inspiring to get, again, our profession is predominantly women and that sort of thing. And I look forward to working with you this year in the House on great other inspiring things, because Rocky is correct. She brought a resolution forward, and the AAPA no longer has a resolution which says they oppose the doctorate degree. So the door is open, so to speak, but we're going to see what PAEA has to say, and who knows the future.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. You so much, Jim. I'll
Yeah,
see you in
thank you,
the
Jim.
house. I'll see you next week.
I've got a question for Raquel or Rocky. I mean, I love that name, Rocky. It fits the energy that you have. I mean, it's just incredible all you've done and what you're doing and we continue to do. And you have a smile on your face. I mean, I think that just says a lot about who you are. But I have a question. So I'm the president of the PAs in Family Medicine, and we're trying to develop primary care. That's basically my goal, and that's what I've kind of why I stepped into leadership post career. I retired from clinical medicine, and now this is what I do. And the PA moms, it sounds like that would be a group that the PAs in family medicine might find some sort of room for collaboration, because the need for primary care is well, we all know what it is. And I think my practices, I own my own practices at the time, were in underserved communities. And the women in the underserved communities were actually better than the men at coming in to be seen. But the women would kind of selflessly not take care of themselves so the family could be taken care of. So I saw that over and over and over again in my practice. And I wonder if that's kind of a theme that PA moms have seen, and is that an issue? And I'm just curious about your thoughts about that.
Yeah, I think that number one, yes, we should definitely collaborate. I think that most of the PA moms are in family medicine. And I do think that is a very big issue. In just general, I think women that have families are neglecting themselves, whether it's their health, their just self-care in general. They're taking care of everyone else and working full time, doing everything. So it's definitely an issue that I see in the group for sure. So.
And can PAs, and I don't take a ton more time. I do want to talk to you about collaborating. I've had the good fortune to become the liaison to the American Academy of Family Physicians, and it's turned out to be a very positive experience. I went to their Congress of Delegates last fall, well, just a couple months ago, and PAs are very well received by them. And I wasn't exactly sure what to expect. It was my first time, and I was very pleasantly surprised at how open arm they were with us and how they want to collaborate with us. And we are collaborating. So, and I bring it up only to say that the physician side of primary care, or family medicine in this case, because it's the physicians and family medicine, are definitely our colleagues more than they are. Like the AMA may not be that way, right? I mean, it's that. And I just wanted to share that with the group because I think it's important to know.
Yeah, I think that's really important. It's number one important for advocacy. We need people on our side. So if you can get anyone advocating for us, that's a physician, that's huge. So, and as long as they understand what we're looking for, I actually spoke to a physician a couple of days ago. Who's on TMA, and it was a very interesting conversation. So.
So I spoke to the past chair, and I've got so much. I know I should just take time and just visit with you, but I spoke to the immediate past chair of the Congress, and we were talking about leadership. And my position was, and I thought this would get me thrown out, was that I think the physician can or should hold the kind of the lead clinical position. But in terms of leadership, if the physician isn't a leader, that someone else should take that role. And they actually agreed, which I was kind of pleasantly surprised about. And so anyway, I think it was a very I'm looking for them to open up more mentorships and preceptorships. That's kind of my ask of them. Because a lot of these primary cares have all gone into these larger organizations, and it's very difficult to get preceptoring to take place there. And I'm going to try and open that up through that group. So,
I think that some physicians forgot what leadership actually means. So
think
that's
you're
the
right.
thing too.
I think you're right. I think there's some physicians aren't meant to be leaders. They're good clinicians, but leadership is something that you have to work at.
So,
So,
Randy, can I make a quick comment?
of
Because I
course.
love when people start this. We're not going to get in this discussion tonight, but I will point this out because I'm going to publish the paper. 92% of all contracts signed by PAs today, when they enter practice, they're signed with healthcare systems. They're not signed with private practice physicians. 80% of all providers in the healthcare system today are working for healthcare systems, not private practice physicians. So you're exactly right. We have to train everybody to be in the leadership role. We are going to have to change the way that we represent our profession to healthcare systems. So physicians and everyone else that works with us, we're there to go to bat for all of us. So I think that's why the doctoral programs are so important. Advocacy and leadership are critical to working with healthcare systems in the future.
That's why we need to regulate our own profession.
Absolutely.
This is, I'm
Well
done with
said.
it. I'm done with this this medical board regulating me. We need our own.
Well said.
Okay. Well, I'm
All
going to get
right.
off now. I've taken enough time.
No. Thanks, Jim. Anybody else that would like to have a question or a comment before I try to land this airplane? No. Well, Raquel, any last words before I say some concluding remarks?
Thank you so much. Has been super fun, number one, and a really great honor to be able to be here with some really amazing PA leaders, and some really amazing people. So thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Well, once again, thank you, Raquel, for your time today and participating in our master class. For everyone else, please join us on December 8th, 2025, for our next master class with AAPA President-elect David Bunnell, a longtime PA and twice president of the American Academy of Physician Assistants, whose career spans clinical practice, research, leadership, advocacy, and education. I hope you can join us, and thank you all for joining us today. And the best to all of you, and have a wonderful rest of your Monday.
Thank you, Rocky. Thank you, Randy.
Thank you.
You, Rocky. Thank you, Randy.
Thank you, guys.